This episode is brought to you by Button Down, the easiest way to start, send, and grow your email newsletter. Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat, a podcast on the Django Web Framework. I'm Carlton Gibson, joined as ever by Will Vincent. Hello, Will.
Hi, Carlton.
Hello, Will. Today we've got with us Emma Devskol, who's the author of DRF Schema Adapter, the very classy Django Classy Docs, a longtime Django community member and a newly elected member of the Django Technical Board for the upcoming 6.x cycle. Emma, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Hello, Will and Carlton.
Well, I'll just let the two of you talk since you're both steering council and in the hierarchy of things. That's at the very tippy top.
You can bring us tea and biscuits then, Will.
Yes.
Okay. So we're diving directly into that, right?
Well, maybe let's just start with that. Like we just had elections for the 6.x Django Steering Council. This is the first time for both of you on the board. Maybe Emma, over to you. Why did you decide to run? And I know you've written a lot about some of the issues Django has. So, what are your goals for the board?
Yeah. Well, these issues, I feel none of them are new, but for some reason, there seems to be a renewed energy in the Django community. Maybe a new influx of people, definitely Django Node Space is helping with that. But there seems to be a renewed energy, and some people want to change things. So I feel that right now is the time to do it. And more so, if we don't do it right now, maybe it will be too late later.
I agree. I think there is a lot of momentum in Django, which is refreshing. And at the same time, the web space is changing, right? There's, Fast API is gaining a lot of mind share. There's Flask is still there. There's new things. So as much as we all love Django, it needs some TLC to stay relevant and perhaps answer some of these big questions that are not new ones, but it feels like the community has been a little stuck on them.
Yes, definitely.
Carlton, what about you? You also ran, joined.
Well, as far as I could see, we all more or less think the same thing. Right? Django's done very well, and it's 20 years old this year, and that's amazing. And then there is a kind of, I don't know, how would I phrase it? It seems like we're going slightly slower every year. Every time we can just go slightly slower because we kind of accrete more mass and there's more difficulty in doing new things. And then exactly as Emma said, with the new community members coming in, there's a push to try and shake loose some of the old craft. And exactly how we can do that is, I think, that's what we're busy trying to work out right now, right?
And one of you put in our notes here, learnings from the Ember community. Is that you, Carlton, I assume?
Well, it is. So this is where we have to cut back to Emma's background because your project that you've maintained for many years is DRF Schema Adapter, which is about making connections to Ember apps. So perhaps if you give us a bit of background of that and how all that works and then how you're involved in the Ember community or how you've seen the Ember community and then that we can, your ideas for bringing some of the things they do there maybe to the Django community.
Yes, so a lot of the applications that I write usually are things that deal with a lot of data, a lot of forms and things like that. Think invoicing, plus. And so at some point I decided to write it in Django compared to other stuff. I've used Odoo and Triton before. I've been part of the Odoo core team a long time ago before it was called Odoo. And so I say, okay, let's do that in Django. And one of my first frustration was to have to write serializers and view sets for everything. So this is the first half of the DRF Schema Adapter. It's in some ways similar to Neapolitan in a way that it lets you write a single class that will define everything for you. And under the hood, it's just a DRF Schema Adapter view set. But then I was also frustrated because I was using Ember as a front end for that. And I also had to rewrite my models in Ember, which are basically exactly the same thing as the serializers in Django. And so this is the second half of the Ember schema adapter. It's an adapter system that lets you take a serializer and transform that into front-end code, whether it be for Ember, which is basically the only one that has been maintained over time. But when we started the project, there were a few of us that got together, and some people wrote adapters for Angular and for React. And so the TLDR is that you write your model, you write an endpoint in Django, and that's all you have to do. After that, you magically have the access for a CRUD system directly in Ember.
So that's kind of like the Holy Grail, right? Write it once.
Yes. And honestly, it's been working quite well for me for years. And yeah, I've been less involved with it lately because I feel we're getting into a new era, and I would love to. I've tried to change to update the Ember schema adapter for that, but it's not going to work. So I'm thinking of starting from scratch to have something similar but with HTMX.
Okay, well, that's quite cool, right? Okay, so that's DRF adapter, schema adapter, and that's. But specifically, we came onto this because there's some things that they do in the Ember community that you think might be, you know, at least ideas or templates for us to do in the Django community. So what are the kind of good things they do over in Ember?
So they do a lot of things that I like in the Ember community. I've always thought that the Ember community and the Django community were kind of kindred spirits in some ways. I think that the thing that seems to be the most relevant to what we're doing right now is their RFC process. So they every new feature or change request goes through an RFC, whether it's a small thing or if it's a big thing, whether it's a core maintainer that wants to add a feature or whether it's somebody that nobody has ever heard of. You start an RFC, which is similar to what we have in Django with the dev process. It's just that we don't use the dev process that much. While in the Ember community, the RFC process is used all the time for everything. And one of the things that I find really positive is that then everything happens in GitHub for them. And it makes things easier to reference. It's gives you an historical overview. It's easy to point out, hey, this is a duplicate of this issue and things like that.
Well, Carlton is fairly wedded to track, so those are fighting words. I think, to be fair, it's more the history, right? That would be the main point, Carlton. There's 20 years of history that would be lost if we switched over.
Yeah, no, that's the difficulty for me. I don't mind track. I don't particularly like GitHub per se, because I feel it would be nice if it wasn't owned by its current owners. But that's a slightly separate discussion to have. The thing that Track has is the entire history of the Django project in it. And when you know, particularly as the next fellow, when an issue comes in and you're like, I don't know, like, you know, some weird thing about the back end of the admin when it generates a form. I'm like, I have no idea about this. The track is an amazing resource for digging through and doing the archaeology and finding out, oh, it's why it is because of this. And the filters and all the rest that track has make GitHub's search look like a joke, to be honest. I've spent a lot of time working on DRF, and it's a project with probably less than 10% of the history of Django. And it's much easier to find history on Django using track than it ever is to find anything on DRF. And so it's not that I'm wedded to track per se, but I am wedded to the ability to find the right piece of history when you need it to work out a decision. But yeah, That is a sort of separate question to this initial thought about, you know, can we use depths more, or all the ideas approach? Because lots of people have ideas, right? And they come to Django and they open an issue on track, and then they're immediately sent to the forum, and then they don't necessarily get a reply on the forum. And then, so what happens to those ideas?
It seems like Ember is just more streamlined, right? I mean, because again, as Carlton was saying, someone comes in with an idea and they're sent on this journey, which maybe the first time they've ever done it. And by the time they get through all that, maybe they get a depth, maybe they don't. And then I feel like most of the enthusiasm or time and energy they've had has been extinguished on the process rather than on the end result.
Yeah, the process is definitely long and complex, I would say, with Django.
So in your ideal world, Waver, what do you think we can do, Emma? So you've clearly got ideas. So.
Well, yeah, so I would encourage us to use the depth process more, but in order to use that process more, it has to be more simple. Right now, to create a draft depth, you already need a list of things, like you need a team and things like that, which is probably overkill just to say, hey, I've got this idea, what do people think about it? Simplifying that process seems to be really the first step to go, because I would love to see the depth process used way more like it is in Ember.
And there's something about the issue tracker thing, is that you talked about duplicates. Like there's a thing that happens with the discussion based approach, and it's not just on the forum, because it used to be on the Google group, the Django developers mailing list. But this thing that happened would be like a conversation would happen, and 9 months later the same conversation would happen, and then 9 months after that the same conversation happened, and it's quite tiring to constantly have to repeat the same conversations and remember, oh, what was it that so-and-so said that was really, and you have to go and find it. And if we could somehow, you know, want something like GitHub's not my favorite, but a GitHub project where we could identify duplicates and all the rest, that's got to be a step up from the way we're doing it now, it seems. We need something like that. I don't know what.
And this exists, right? I mean, it exists in GitHub. I've just joined a new company that uses this tool called UTrack, where you start typing something and it auto-populates, did you mean? It's doable. I venture to say it's a solved problem. I don't know. But like, we're not the only ones having this pain, and it doesn't require crazy search or anything, right? It's just looking for the terms in your title and headline and just auto-showing what else is in the database.
Yes, and GitHub is maybe not the best solution. I agree. I personally have everything on a GitLab that I host myself. I only have duplicates, copies on GitHub. But we also have to be in phase with reality that everybody has a GitHub account. Everybody who might want to contribute to Django has already a GitHub account, and probably they spend quite a bit of time there, because either this is what they work with every day, or they are involved in some other projects and things like that. So even if it's not ideal, it's probably not a bad choice either.
We can't fight every battle.
No, exactly. I think one thing you've talked about as well, is perhaps that, you know, a contributor comes along and they perhaps don't get the time that they need to really be welcomed in. And I'd ask your thoughts on that. But also, I mean, do you think we're just running too close to capacity so that we don't have the time?
Definitely. We're too close to capacity, and it's a vicious circle. People who are already involved don't really have time for people who are less involved, and people who are less involved, there's tons of testimonies of people who feel that they have had a door slammed in their face when trying to contribute to Django. And so we have a very, very low retention of contributors, which means that the people who stay, they have more work, and we go round and round. And at some point, we have to break that cycle somewhere.
Yeah, and of course, it's easy to just say, you know, raise some money, have something like the fellows for XYZ problems that we have. I mean, I wonder, just thinking of Ember, is there anything we can unpack in this conversation around how other communities manage it? Because these feel endemic to open source projects where you do end up with a handful of people keeping it going and they just get kind of tired and...
So I'm not sure how they manage that in the Ember community. I know how they do it. I don't know how they got to that point. So there's one requirement to be part of the Ember core team is that you have to have a full-time job. You cannot be full-time open source maintainer. So what happens is that most of the people who are on the core team are paid by their employer to write Ember or to do Ember related stuff. That's the part that I don't know how they got to have that. I believe it's just a matter of getting a few people to have that. And once you have a few people, then you can show other companies, hey, look, this other company, they are paying somebody to work on Ember.
You also need companies that really rely on Ember, right? Because it's possible.
But there are thousands and thousands of companies that rely on Django. To take Simon Charette, he's given time by Zapier to work on the ORM. But we need more of that, actually. We need that 5% time, that 10% time a day a week, day every 2 weeks to give to Django. And I think that would be an amazing possibility to pursue and to poke companies and to say, hey, do you know that you're relying on us? The most useful thing you can do is, you know,
well,
give
maybe
some time.
It's I don't know if it's formalized somewhere, but also if we had a page on the Django project site that listed companies, because companies do need to get something. I think, you know, marketing, whatever, people need something. If there was somewhere that said these companies, someone is paid to work on Django, maybe that's, I mean, for example, like I've just started working at JetBrains, which makes PyCharm, and they're like, yeah, you can work on core Django, but I have to set the goals, figure all that out with my manager, update it, which I'm going to, but you know, there isn't a, I'm not aware of like a document of here's how to manage this within your company. Cause I think most company or many, many good employers would, if you said 5-10%, I want to contribute back to Django, but you need to spell it out for them what they get from it. It's not just that they get to keep the employee.
They
who
need
wants
some
to do
return
it.
On investment.
Like, I don't know if that idea has come up again, someone can holler, but like, it doesn't seem like a huge thing to list. I don't know. And then maybe that's unfair to companies that don't have it, but that feels like the kind of stuff that gets us in the way rather than people wanting to do it or companies that rely on Django. It's just the ease of mechanism of doing what we what we want, like the depths.
Well, one easy perk is to have an easier time to get the features that you want. So yeah, if you're a company that you're paying a somebody to work one day a week on Django, given the amount of time it takes to get a feature in Django, you increase your chances like by 20 times by paying somebody to do it. And if you rely on Django for your business and you want a specific feature, that's a good way to get it.
Or third party, right? Third party even seems a more immediate way because often companies, right, that's the pathway in. So if they're already working on a third party package, yeah, I'm just agreeing with what you said.
I was thinking about this today. I was thinking, you know, because since I stepped down as fellow, I've started a new company. I've built it on Django. I now depend on Django again as, you know, as the foundation of my business. And I was thinking what actually is important to me. And it's to be honest, it's not features. It's the stability and knowing that security patches will get done and that it, you know, that it will keep the it will keep going. That's really important. Okay, that it's got the features that it has. I don't want them taken away, but anything it hasn't got, I can think, oh, I can just add that on the side, right? It's not so important to me, but what is important to me and important to my business partner, important to clients, is that to be able to say, look, we've got a rock solid core here. That's why I use it, right?
I agree that stability is important, but there's this little thing. It's never a huge feature, but there is, let's say there's this little thing that doesn't work like you need it to work in Django. So what you do is you copy paste it to your own library, to your own code, you change three lines. And every time there is a new release of Django, you have to check that those three lines have not changed in Django, because if they have, you need to change your code. And that's the kind of thing that becomes really annoying after a couple of years.
There's
little thing, but yeah, major features is not something that a company is going to want to add to Django most of the time.
We were talking about capacity, and you know, because the obvious thing when we say how is to fund a new fellow, but say, you know, could we get more money and fund an extra fellow? I kind of feel that would buy us an amount of time, right? That would give us more capacity, but somehow that would be overwhelmed. I think we need a different kind of strategy somehow, because the fellows are running at full capacity. We could add another one that would buy us, you know, say a couple of, you know, it's like when you build an extra lane on a motorway, like 2 years later, the motorway's just as congested as it was before. I wonder, one thing I've been thinking about is, could we modularize somehow? Could we split? Because there's this single point of failure, right? There's this single point of throughput. Everything has to go through the mergers, through the two fellows, through Django Core with its 8-month release cycle. And do you have any thoughts on breaking it up a little bit? Or
yeah, I do. So there's different models. There's the pyramid model. Like pyramids, they used to have, okay, this is the basics of pyramid, but if you want to have everything, there is this cookie cutter that installs everything. But if you want to have an API, there is this cookie cutter that installs everything. I don't think they were very successful with that, so I'm not sure it would be good. There are definitely some things that I don't use in Django. And I'm sure that when I'm going to say it, some people are going to come to me and say, hey, I use that all the time and it works great.
You're going to upset somebody, so yes, don't worry.
But the size framework, for example, I've always, it either gets in my way when I want to build something that's just one single website, or it doesn't have the features that I need if I want to do something, a SaaS-like thing with 5 domains accessing the same code base and everything. So this could be a candidate to remove. There are things that are there that are needed. There are tons of things that depend on the size framework as it is right now. But is anybody actually using that correctly? Templates, that's something that's going to upset somebody, but does...
You're going to upset me now, because I love them.
I like Django template. I never use Jinja. But if we want to thin down Django, do we need to have templates in Django Core? There is a lot of applications that just do Django REST framework. So could templates be part of something else? That's an example. And the Wagtail does it in a certain way that kind of works, which is they remove things from Wagtail and they say, oh, by the way, now this is a separate application. The problem is that it will probably go unmaintained at some point.
Yes, right.
But there is a way that works that doesn't break anybody's code. Say, oh, you're updating from this version to that version, so now you need to add this extra package in your requirements. That's it. So that's a way that we can remove things. We've been talking recently about trying to look at the code in Django and try maybe refactor some of the things that are there. It's not going to be half of Django's code that's going to disappear by refactoring things, but there are things that can go away. And this is something when working on legacy codes, usually this is a good way to starting. When you start somewhere, you see something that doesn't, you're writing new code and you see next to your code or you're using in your new code something that's not great, well, improve it. And sometimes it breaks things and we have to be ready for that.
One of the big selling points of Django is the ease of upgrade now. And we all remember, or everyone who's been using Django since the old days remembers, like what it used to be like updating. And there was this, it was kind of almost cultural that a bragging right. So I'm still running 0.96. So I'm on 1.2. Other, you know, and it was who was running the oldest. Whereas now it's very much you're expected to be on a supported version, and it's so easy to update. There's no excuse for not keeping rolling. How do we balance those two? You wrote a great blog post about this, about, you know, I can't remember the exact title, but it was touching on this issue. How do we balance those two things? Perhaps, you know.
It would be great. And right now I understand there's something that two fellows cannot do, but it would be great if Adam Johnson's package Django upgrade was part of Django, because if we have an upgrade path, we can break things as long as we have a solution.
I just keep thinking maybe it's even a level higher, higher than what we're discussing, is that we just don't have the people and the money. I mean, we're like, if you look around, for example, like I just met PHP, I didn't realize has a foundation only as of a couple years ago, like 3 years ago. And one of my colleagues runs it and they have, you know, 10 people paid to work on PHP. Now, okay, that's a language, not a framework, but look at Laravel, which again, doesn't have a community, has one person that makes money hand over foot, separate from raising venture capital money, but they just have people. They just have a lot more people. And I felt this when I was on the board, that there is a shift from Django exists to exist and Django exists to kind of thrive. And those of us who've been around for a while can actually make things happen, right? Instead of, it does feel a little bit like the same old conversations, but it butts up against the fact that at best you have someone like Simon Charette who can do some time, but not a ton of time. And then the organizational stuff, no company is going to pay for you really to do the organizational stuff, which leads into, I know the current board, multiple people would like to have an executive director, but it's volunteers meeting once a month, trying to meet the needs of a big corp that has, you know, there's people whose career is presenting this properly to these corporations. So I'm musing out loud. I guess I keep wishing there was a way we could shake that money tree, because I feel like we're just asking too much of our people to do it. So that's not a question. That's just a rant, I guess. But, you know, I feel like we take it upon ourselves. Like, why can't I do more? The same people are just pulled in to solve these problems. And ultimately, until one of us is able to work on it in a more full-time capacity with whatever funding, it's just too much of a thing. I don't know. Did I just waste a couple of minutes, or is that something to proceed?
I mean, this is the topic we're talking around, right? I mean, Emma, to turn that into a question, is do we need to raise more money to get more capacity so that we can ease up the logjam that we have? Or do you see like enough ground that can be cleared to buy us a bit of space to give us more freedom.
I think there is ground that can be cleared to give us some freedom. It doesn't mean that we cannot use more money.
More money as well. Would always
more money and more time is always good. I've always had this feeling that the Python community in general is like this very purist open source compared to you were mentioning PHP and Laravel. They're very purist and they don't want to sell out to companies and they don't want to sell out to this or that. And the side effect of that is, they sold out. Maybe they're just doing business, but they get money. We don't.
This episode is brought to you by Buttondown. That's buttondown.com, email software for developers like you. There are hundreds of email marketing software services out there, and they all pretty much offer the same thing. Collect and clean addresses, send out broadcasts or drip campaigns, get analytics so you can see what's resonating and what's not. Buttondown is designed to hook into the tools that you already care about. Everything from static site generators like Jekyll or Hugo to payment platforms like Stripe and Memberful. You can hook your site up to Buttondown with just a form element or a simple REST call. Write emails in Markdown and then get on with the actual work you're supposed to do. New customers can save 50% off their first year with Buttondown using the coupon code Django. And if you email support, they'll white glove migrate your existing subscribers and archives for free.
Yeah, I mean, and look who's on the Python Software Foundation board. It's Meta, Microsoft, you know, examples. I feel like perhaps I'm coming at this from a new angle because I'm now working for PyCharm, so we're thinking about marketing. Like I was just this morning looking at the homepage of, you know, Flask and FastAPI. FastAPI has very similar to Django REST framework. Just on the homepage, boom, companies that sponsor, right? Like what is it worth to a company to be on the Django project homepage and we say it requires this minimum amount. There's only so many spots. There's no way we couldn't raise six figures doing that. And again, I'm not currently on the board. We have new board members. I know many of them feel this way. Like it's just all the more jarring for me now being on the inside of a company that, you know, makes money off of Python and Django and has a budget, but there's not even much visibility. You know, part of it is people come and go in larger corporations, but there's not even much visibility around, for example, the Django campaign that PyCharm has done for years that I helped work with, you know, because some of the people aren't there. You know, I guess I just see that I have renewed energy to kind of like go to these companies and be like, hey, like you've got 2025 marketing goals. You're spending money on Google and other things. Throw a little here and be on the Django homepage. I don't think that upsets anyone. And I would couple that with we bury our existing platinum sponsors, of which JetBrains and others are one. Like we bury it.
It's hard to find, right? It should be front and center.
I can't find it. I go to Google to find it. Like, you know? So anyways, I agree that there are things that we can do to clear the path. I also think that we can still be pure without, but be more recognize the fact we compete in this world in which other frameworks have far more resources than we do.
So can we call the episode, "There is no ethical open source under capitalism"?
Sure, why not?
Just to give context before I throw it back to Emma, that number you said, we can easily make six figures, that's the mythical extra fellow, or that's the mythical executive director, right? Just there. That's in that package that you just talked about. There's the money to fund the thing that we say we want. We should get the board on and, you know, harass them.
All right, I'll go ping them after this episode. Here's a new idea no one thought of. What if we...
What if we made the money we keep saying?
Yeah.
Emma, I was going to throw that back. Do you have any more thoughts that you wanted to say on this topic? Because there's one other thing I want to
talk I touched on it a little bit with mentioning the templates. There's also this thing that with Django, the Django project from the start has had a point of having everything in-house. So we have everything written inside the Django project. Maybe we can leverage other open source projects like Jinja for the templates, or Click for the management comment and other things like that. That would be a way to cut down the lines of code. And there is always a risk by using a third party application that it's not going to get maintained and things like that. But is it really that bad? Let's say we use Click and Click doesn't get maintained anymore, then we have to bring Click in. Oh, well, that's the situation we started with, so it's not that big of a deal.
Interesting. Because just this week there was an Armin, what's his surname?
Vernacker?
Yeah, he did a thing about rendering, you know, writing your own one, and then there was a...
Yeah, he spoke to you, Carlton. You felt seen in that.
Yeah, well, exactly. There's and the HTMX website and USA appeared on vendoring and, you know, arguing the opposite. So what's nice, yes, we could take on dependencies maybe. Like but how far do we push that? Are we suddenly using SQL Alchemy, or, you know, well, what point does it...
Well, PeeWee, not SQL Alchemy.
Right, okay.
Emma, I wanted to ask you, we're talking about Django REST framework. What do you make of Django Ninja? Because I would say that's not even the hotness. That is on pace to replace Django REST framework for reasons that aren't completely clear to me, but that seems to be the trajectory. So I'm curious your thoughts.
No, it is. I believe it is. And I think that one of the reasons, probably not the only reason, but one of the reasons is that Django REST framework is in maintenance mode.
Yeah, just stopped.
So the people who are using it are going to keep using it. If you have to choose a new framework today, a new REST framework today to write your Django application, which one are you going to go with? The one that is actively developed, or the one that's in maintenance mode? Chances are that you're going to go with the actively developed one.
And it's faster, in quotes, too, so.
Yes, I don't.
Carlton's reacting. We don't.
You're going to just trigger me on my synthetic benchmarks rant any second now.
No, like, I agree.
User monitoring.
I've never actually thought that Django, Python, or Django REST framework were that slow. Python is not fast. If you want something so fast, go with REST, or Go, or C++, or write your web server in assembly. Usually, it's not this layer that's slow. What's going to be slow is your request to the database. It's going to be your file access and all that. So I've never felt that Django or Django REST framework was a bottleneck when it comes to speed.
No. And I just had this last week with... So my new company is the platform is built on Java. Java IntelliJ is the main product. So there's a lot of Java developers, and, you know, they tend to be older. And, you know, at lunch, one of them was telling me Python slow and web is slow. And I was like, what are you talking about, man? Like, abstractions are bad to that point. Like, why? So I think part of it is people come in focused on the language and they don't know the web at all. They don't understand what infrastructure is. And, you know, arbitrary benchmarks, you know, I did pause it. I was like, well, what is an extra minute saved to developer time versus milliseconds later? And Carlton's Sorry. Making the face that, I have.
No, yeah. No, I'm actually going to have to fire off now, because this whole fascination with speed, it's like a fascination with scale. It's ridiculous. Sorry, define your metrics that you need to hit. Define the performance that you're looking for, and does your application fit inside inside those performance metrics? Absolutely, a Django app or a Flask app or a, you know, whatever Python web framework will fit in that as well as anything else. Exactly, because what Emma's talking about, your bottleneck is not your web framework, right? It's the connections to the database, and your limits to, you know, scalability are there, not you know, which web framework to use or which programming language you wrote, you use it. You know, I'm going really low level. Yeah, brilliant. It took me months to write, you know, my Hello World. No, just so it gets so, it's just so backwards. It's so, it's not an engineering mindset. That's the thing.
It's almost like a political question where you're just like, we're just talking past each other here.
It's like, yeah, hooray. I support the Eagles. No, I'm a Cowboys man. No, that what? It's not engineering.
I don't know how many sports fans there are. Well, Emma, I wanted to ask you about Django Classy Doc, if we can shift gears.
Yes.
This is an amazing project.
Thank you.
It's relatively new, couple of months old. So classy class-based views for your docs, for your code, right? Like, tell us more. What made you take that next step of putting it into a package?
Because once again, with everything, I needed it. I wanted it for me, and it's much easier for it to be in a package. And when I work with Django, I either have CCBV or CDRF open on the screen next to my code, because this is what I use as documentation.
We don't have to argue about function-based views then. Good.
No, that's another. Okay. Those are great, but when you start to build more complex application and you have a code base that is 10 years old and you need to find something, sometimes the class-based architecture does not let you find it easily. And the way you can do it, you can open a shell, manage.py shell, and go from there and find what you need. But having it on a website that is generated by your code is also much, much nicer. So every piece of business logic of properties or anything that you've added on top of class-based views or Django REST framework or models, it's right there. It's auto documenting in your code, and even if you don't have code comments, if you have doc strings and everything, it's really, really powerful. But even if you don't have doc strings, just being able to say, "Oh, this is defined in that file, and this is the code that I'm calling right now," it's super helpful while you're working.
Agree. Yes.
The only question is, why hasn't anybody written this before and published it?
What's your answer?
I don't know.
You must have a thought. You don't know.
I don't know. I've looked, or maybe I didn't know where to look, but what I found some people who've done it for Python in general. And that use Ginger for templating, for example. But that's not fun, because for using Django, why load two templating engines? I didn't find anything specific to Django, and that was fine-tuned for Django. There's probably a lot of progress I still can do there on fine-tuning for Django. But for example, a Django model is something with specific with fields and things that will not map correctly or into... It will not be intuitive if you just take a Python version of this kind of tool.
Yeah, you want to represent it in a way that makes sense to a Django developer, right?
Yeah. And yeah, maybe it's because of what you say, Carlton. Maybe nobody uses class-based views because they hate it.
No. You must be... I love class-based views. The criticism is about the implementation, not the class-based views, right? The whole function-based view versus class-based view thing, that's just a myth. That's like, oh, I don't like the extra indentation you get in a class, but then in your function-based view, you've got that's the sort of what the complaint comes down to. And then it's like, but hang on, in your function view, you've got if request.method equals post, and then you've got everything indented a block. It all just works out the same. It's like...
Ooh, those are fighting words, Carlton. I like it.
Yeah, I feel like this is touching on another issue that I feel we have with the Django maybe not with the Django community, but with the Django resources, is that there's something that Python does very well. Python is welcoming to the newcomer who is, Python is a new basic. If you want to, if you're 8 year old, you want to start programming, start with Python. But if you have 30 years experience, and you want to do things more advanced, Python is still a great language for you. And in Django, yeah, we have focused a lot of energy in making Django welcoming to newcomers and easy to approach. But once you get to mid or senior level and try to find resources, it starts becoming harder. And this is a space where I feel that class-based views and Django's implementation of class-based views are useful. It's a bit more of a more advanced topics, but there is roughly very little tutorials and resources for people who've reached that level. Once you're at that level, basically you're on your own. And that might be one of the reasons why Django class-based views gets so little love.
Will, you're an educator. You're in this space. Like, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, what do I think about that? I guess how many people would sit through an educational thing on class-based views as opposed to having a specific problem with a generic class-based view and then kind of stumble through and find classy class-based views? I suspect most people are in the latter category, though I'd certainly be happy to... I mean, In my books, for example, I now start with function-based views in the beginner's one and then work into class-based views. That was something I'd just started with class-based views in earlier editions. For the more advanced cases, I do have things where I show how I found something. I show searching in the source code. I show classy class-based views, but I'm guilty of not having gone, I guess, deeper on it myself. I suppose I would need to think of good examples of, you know, build a blog, build a bookstore where you can have fun playing around with the class-based views a bit, because I think most people work backwards. Problem they want solved, and then the teaching, they'll accept it along the way. But to just be more comfortable with class-based views, I haven't figured out how to do that. But I don't know if anyone else has either. I mean, I guess that's... And this is the problem too with educational content in general, is that I feel like beginner, intermediate, it's okay. Advanced stuff is very difficult to think about because everyone does it so differently. It's difficult to, it needs to be more, I guess, pedagogical, more about teaching rather than helping someone, you know, build a pro project, I think.
Can I ask, does it work from a market point of view? Because if you think about the addressable market size, there's an awful lot of beginners and there's some intermediates and there's very few advanced people. So if you write, if you create content for advanced people, you're automatically limiting, like,
you have to charge a lot more.
Whether or not you can.
I mean, you know, I don't want to make this about that topic, but like I did just accept a full-time job to give people a sense of... Right. How big the market is for Django educational materials. You know, I'm still doing it, but, you know, that's part of the problem.
I mean, there must be a market for it because there's all those certifications. You were talking about Java. You can get a ton of certification in Java on every different levels. So,
right. You know, people get it from Coursera or Meta. I guess it's that question of a sort of certification to fulfill a requirement for a job or to just be good enough versus, you know, for me and other content, you're paying your own money and time to get better. So you really have to want it. It has to be that much better to pay $50 for something of mine when you could get lots of other stuff for for almost free. I don't know. I don't really want to get into the educational side thing, but...
But it's the same as the open source problem, right? It's like, you know, is people aren't going to pay, or this is the problem. The marginal cost of delivery for an open source project is approximately zero, right? It's you go and fetch it off PyPI, you pip install it. They cost the Django developers nothing. And so there's a kind of economic grind to the bottom where nobody pays for open source and... we end up in this that we've been talking about all episode, this sustainability problem.
I feel like I'm going to get wound up on this. I mean, yes, there's, I don't know. I'm going to shoot my mouth off.
So Emma, I'm going to swing it back to Emma now. Emma, so I've just feel from the comment, I know you've got lots of positive ideas and lots of positive to say, but we've been quite negative in what we've been talking about a little bit. And we've been hitting on problems and digging into those problems. What's your sort of, solar punk positive out. Where do we want to go looking positively, dynamically for Django now?
So in your view? First of all, only people who don't do anything wrong. So the fact that we've been negative, it means that at least something has been done. And where I want to go is that I feel that Django is probably still a framework for the future. There is a tremendous push toward things like HTMX right now that bring the ball back into the backend camp, I'm going to say. It's slow. Corporations are still not on board and things like that, but work slowly. The pendulum is swinging back to server-side things, website. And Django has a great ORM. It's got nice forms. It has some batteries included, even if they are not perfect right now. There, authentication is there, authorization is there, and so it's got all the basis for you to write your application, and let's ride that wave and jump on that train and stay the best framework that can be there to write your application.
Well, I'll say something positive too, which is, I mean, we are riding the Python train, which I think anyone, that's the train you want to be on. It's growing and growing and growing and growing. Even internally, I was just looking at marketing stuff for PyCharm, like at JetBrains. PyCharm is not the biggest seller at the company. It's IntelliJ, which is a JavaScript IDE. But Python is even for a company with 100 products or whatever it is, like the Python stuff gets the most traffic, right? So we are riding the train up and to the right. And Django, you know, I know there's different metrics of which GitHub stars or different surveys. I still think, practically speaking, Django is far in advance in terms of real developers on real projects using it. So I'm positive by all those things, right? Like it would be hard if we were like waging this battle and those trend lines were going in the opposite direction. But it is balancing those two barbells of how do we stay friendly to beginners and make the batteries not imposing, and at the same time do stuff for the people who are using it and want it to be better and slide, you know, Django upgrade, right? I mean, we should have that.
It's an interesting one because, like, let's say we said, no, we're not going to merge it into core. How do we package it with Django even if we didn't merge it into core? That's an interesting thing. Because if we can solve that problem, then we can also solve the other problem, which is how do we pull bits out of Django without them disappearing, right? It's so as if there is limited capacity in core for quick things, big things to come in because we're limited state. Well, okay, what can we do? So it, from the UX perspective, so fast API is by default, you do pip install fast API or UV these days, but pip install fast API square bracket standard, right? And you get various bits that come with it. If you just want the core bit, then you just install the core bit by itself. But why couldn't we do something similar in Django? I know it's not what we've done historically, but you know, Django pip install Django square brackets bells and whistles. I don't know, it's just an idea, but we can play in this space now.
Isn't there somebody who is working on taking the ORM out of Django? I know this is something that people have been talking about for 10 years, but I thought I heard somebody was actually doing it.
I don't know. I've heard various people talk about making it easier to use Django in to use the ORM in a standalone project, a non-web project. So, you know, you could use the ORM in your command line tool a bit more simply than currently. So you kind of, at the moment, you have to know the black magic to get it to. It works. It's not very hard, but you have to know it. And it's not really documented. But wouldn't it be nice if you could use the ORM everywhere?
That would be this cool. This could be the first step, pip install Django ORM. If we could achieve that,
maybe.
Then I think we have a recipe.
We should just go all plugins like Simon Willison, right? Just plug in.
I'm experimenting with that.
But, oh, yeah? So Simon did a talk in... Go on.
No, I'm experimenting with that. One of my side projects right now is a static site generator based on Django. I am trying to have everything be plugin. So to just have the basics that does web pages. That's it. That would be the core. And then you have plugins for Teams, and you have Teams and layouts, and you have plugins for a blog, and you have plugins for collections, and plugins for a lot of things. This is one of the size projects that I'm playing with right now.
I love that idea. I was just having a conversation with a experienced Python person who wanted to do something, update their personal site, and I won't use a gender, was mentioning different options. And I said, well, why not just Django? And, well, I don't want to pay hosting costs. Okay, well, why not Pelican? Well, it's not quite what I want, you know, but this is someone who knows Django, right? So if someone could wave that wand and go local Django static pages, you can deploy on wherever.
So
yes, sign me up.
What I'm using, so I'm not writing anything special for the static part. I'm using Distal, which is a tool. You have to decorate your URLs with it. So you have to tell Distal, for example, how to find all the blog posts or all the pages. And you decorate your URL patterns with that, and then you generate your website, and it will generate everything in a folder, and then you can FTP it wherever you want, or do, or put it on GitHub pages or anything.
I'm putting a link in the notes. Django Distal. That's new to me. I didn't know about that.
I see a little birdie told me that might be getting a little rewrite and an update at some point, like a big new version.
Yeah, I haven't heard back. I don't know if it's still on the table, but...
Well, fingers crossed. It's not unmaintained.
No, it's not.
Like, that's...
My marketing hat on. That could be a cool, like, Google Summer of Code thing to try to push some momentum, because, you know, how do we promote Django? Lots of people want a static site. And again, no disrespect to Pelican or other ones out there, but if you can just use Django for both and solve the hosting cost thing, seems like a good idea to me. Yes, Carlton?
Every year, you try every web framework, right? You go in, you give it a try, you give it a play, you see what it's about. But when it comes down to actually getting things done, what do you pull out the bag? You pull Django out the bag because you were that much more efficient with it, that much more, you know, familiar, you know every little corner, you know all the nuances. So for Django to have a static site story that was kind of, you know, modern, up to date, and well supported, that would be a great addition to the tool belt. It'd be like, yes, I can use my best tools
right
for that.
And it's already how I'm teaching it, which is I start with URLs and templates and views. We do a couple projects, we don't even touch the database, and I've seen how off-putting deployment can be. I used to show deployment progressively more complex with every project. I've moved it entirely to the end of my beginner's book because enough people told me that they just skipped that stuff. So I think separating it out, modularizing that, I'm in favor. well, somehow we've come up to almost an hour. I feel like there were other things. Is there any specific things we didn't talk about, Emma, that you wanted to shout out while you have a microphone?
I'd love to give a shout out to PyScript. So PyScript is a way to run Python in the front end, and we've mentioned that things are getting back to everything server-side with HTMX and things like that, but I feel there's still some products, anything that is long-lived in a browser, anything that you would install as an Electron application, it is a great fit for PyScript. If you want to write to be able to write everything in Python, PyScript is already there. It's a bit slow to start, so you're not going to use it for your blog. But if you're, I don't know, writing a point of sale application, PyScript can come here and replace JavaScript front end if you want to do everything in Python.
How are you using it these days?
These days, I'm not using it much, but I did write a proof of concept front-end framework in PyScript. that has everything. It's got it uses SQLite for caching any request to have a local copy of anything that it gets back from the API. It uses Jinja for template rendering. It has routing and everything. And I did that. It was the early days of PyScript. And PyScript has come a long way since then. So at that time, there were bits that were a bit janky and not very pretty. If someone has the time to look into that right now, I'm sure we can have a very nice front-end framework in PyScript.
All right. I like it.
I've seen Django running in PyScript as well, and you know the Rocket page there, and you just think, well, there's that Postgres version that can run in it as well, run in WASM as well, and you could have Django running sort of fully locally or fully remotely, whichever way you like to think of it, possibly.
Yeah, I feel that it's a great. It can be a great tool for documentation and tutorials. If on a documentation website you have the website load a full Django and pull you into the shell and say, "Hey, now you can type this comment, and this is what's going to happen," or you can run migrations. Here's what's going to happen. You don't need to install Python locally. You don't need anything. You don't even need a computer. You can do that on your phone. That can be very powerful for teaching.
I'm going to have to look into this more. Yes, I've tried earlier versions of this a number of years ago, and I need to give this a go again. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Take us out, Carlton.
So I guess we should wrap. Yeah, well, I guess we should wrap. I was going to effuse madly about... I'm positive about the future, Django. There were two sort of points in my life where it was very pivotal. One was around the birth of DRF and the Kickstarter around that, and you know, I jumped on the using DRF and helping that. And then the second was this switch in the last few years that you were talking about to HTMX and Alpine and these other technologies that are more lightweight and more Django developer friendly. So I've been excited like you. Thank you so much for coming on. It's been a real pleasure.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure for me too.
Thank you. So djangochat.com, and we will see everyone next episode. Bye-bye.
Join us next time. This episode was brought to you by Button Down, the easiest way to start, send, and grow your email newsletter.